First, I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Anna Mateo and Brian Lynn. John Russell is here to answer a question from an English learner who lives in Iran. We close with the American story, $1,000, by O. Henry. But first, here is Anna Mateo.
In Zimbabwe, officials have begun moving more than 2,500 wild animals from the south to the north. This move is to rescue the animals from a severe lack of water caused by climate change. The lack of water, or drought, has now replaced illegal hunting, called poaching, as the biggest threat to wildlife. Among the animals being moved are about 400 elephants, 2,000 impalas, 70 giraffes, 50 buffaloes, 50 wildebeest, 50 zebras, 50 elands, 10 lions, and a pack of 10 wild dogs. Called Project Rewild Zambezi, this is one of Southern Africa's biggest live animal capture and relocation efforts. What does such a huge effort look like? A helicopter helps to round up thousands of impalas into a closed area. A mechanical device lifts medicated upside-down elephants into vehicles. Teams of rangers drive other animals into metal cages. Finally, a long line of trucks starts a journey of about 700 kilometers to take the animals to their new home. It is the first time in 60 years that Zimbabwe has had such a mass movement of wildlife inside its borders. Between 1958 and 1964, when the country was white minority-ruled Rhodesia, more than 5,000 animals were moved in what was called Operation Noah. That operation rescued wildlife from the rising water caused by building a large dam project on the Zambezi River. The dam created one of the world's largest man-made lakes, Lake Kariba. This time, the lack of water has made it necessary to move wildlife. Tinasha Farrow is a spokesperson for the Zimbabwe National Parks and Wildlife Management Authority. He said the environment, or habitat, has become too dry from long periods of no rain. The park agency issued permits for the animals to be moved. He said this is to avoid a disaster from happening. For years we have fought poaching, and just as we are winning that war, climate change has emerged as the biggest threat to our wildlife, Farrow told the Associated Press. He said many of our parks are becoming overpopulated, and there is little water or food. The animals end up destroying their own habitat. They become a danger to themselves and to neighboring human areas as they look for food. The result, he said, is a constant conflict. Another idea would be to reduce the number of animals. But conservation groups protest such killings. Farrow said that Zimbabwe last did this in 1987. The effects of climate change on wildlife are not only happening in Zimbabwe. Across Africa, national parks are increasingly threatened by below-average rainfall and new building projects. These parks are home to wildlife such as lions, elephants, and buffaloes. One of the new homes in Zimbabwe for the animals is Sapi Reserve. This privately run reserve is east of Manapools National Park, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It is known for its beautiful setting along the Zambezi River. I'm Anna Mateo.
Researchers say new examinations of arm and leg fossils support existing evidence that an identified species could be our earliest known ancestor. The fossil bones were found near a skull that was discovered in 2001 in the African nation of Chad. The scientists who found the skull have suggested that it belonged to a being who walked upright and could be our earliest known ancestor. Now, researchers say a study involving the arm and leg fossils strengthens that argument. The team looked for signs that the species walked on 2 feet instead of 4. The move toward upright walking is a main division between human and ape development. The fossil species, called Sahelanthropus chadensis, walked upright while still being able to climb and move around in trees, the team said. The species dates back to around 7 million years ago, which makes it by far the oldest known human ancestor. That is about 1 million years older than other early known hominins. Hominin is a group that includes modern humans and species closely related to humans. Researchers, including scientists at the University of Poitiers in France, closely examined the fossil skull, teeth, and jaw. They argued that the animal must have walked on 2 feet and held its head upright. This argument was based on the placement of a hole in the skull where the spinal cord connects to the brain. Other experts, however, have not been persuaded or convinced by the early evidence. The latest work includes a thigh bone that was not linked to S. chadensis at first and went unstudied for years. Other researchers at the French University found the bone in the laboratory's collection and realized it probably belonged to the fossil species. Compared to bones from other species, the thigh was linked closer to upright walking humans than apes who used their feet and arms, the study found. The new findings were recently reported in the publication Nature. Study co-writer Frank Guy recently spoke about the fossil examinations to reporters. There is not one feature. There is just a total pattern of features, he said. The debate over the species is likely to continue. Ashley Hammond is a scientist at the American Museum of Natural History in New York. She said more research is needed to find the being's rightful place on the evolutionary tree. I'm not fully convinced yet, Hammond told the Associated Press. This could still also be a fossil ape. Another researcher at the University of Poitiers, Roberto Macchiarelli, examined the thigh bone in the past and decided the species was probably an ape. Looking at the new study, Macchiarelli said he still does not believe the species was a hominin, though it might have walked on two legs at times. I'm Brian Lynn.
Hello. This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the difference between the words deplete and evacuate. Dear Learning English, I am Mehran from Iran, Tehran. I'm interested in your program and I'm improving my English from VOA Learning English. I have a question. What the difference is between deplete and evacuate? Best regards, Mehran. Dear Mehran, thank you for asking about these two terms. Deplete and evacuate both suggest to lessen or remove something. However, there are big differences in the dictionary definitions of these words and their uses. Let us start with deplete. Deplete is a verb that takes a direct object. It means to lessen, reduce, or use up something over time. We commonly use deplete with nouns like strength, energy, resources, money, or funds.
Jack depleted his college fund a year before graduation.
This sentence means that Jack used up most or all of the money in his college fund before he graduated.
Natural resources, like oil and coal, will become depleted, so we must find other energy sources.
This means that natural resources will run out after an amount of time.
The nurse's 16-hour shift depleted all of her energy. She was so tired by the time she returned home.
This means that she had no more energy left. Let us move on to evacuate. Evacuate is also a verb that takes a direct object. It usually means to remove people from an area because it is dangerous. The word is often linked with the idea of an emergency. When we use the term evacuate, there is a sense of quickness or urgency. In everyday speech, this is the most common way that we use evacuate.
When the fire alarm goes off, people must evacuate the building.
This means people must leave the building if they hear the alarm, whether there is a fire or not. Evacuate can also mean to make or leave empty, or sometimes in the case of a body, it can mean to discharge.
We had to evacuate all the furniture in the house to clean the floors. The doctor evacuated rocks and dirt from the open cut on her knee.
These two words might seem similar in meaning, but they are very different. You can think of deplete as using up or lessening over time. For evacuate, you can think of removing very quickly because of an emergency. Please let us know if these examples and explanations have helped you, Maron. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm John Russell.
$1,000, said the lawyer Tolman in a severe and serious voice, and here is the money. Young Gillian touched the thin package of $50 bills and laughed. It's such an unusual amount, he explained kindly to the lawyer. If it had been $10,000, a man might celebrate with a lot of fireworks. Even $50 would have been less trouble.
You heard the reading of your uncle's will after he died, continued the lawyer Tolman. I do not know if you paid much attention to its details. I must remind you of one. You are required to provide us with a report of how you use this $1,000 as soon as you have spent it. I trust that you will obey the wishes of your late uncle. You may depend on it, said the young man respectfully. Gillian went to his club. He searched for a man he called Old Bryson. Old Bryson was a calm, antisocial man, about 40 years old. He was in a corner reading a book. When he saw Gillian coming near, he took a noisy, deep breath, laid down his book, and took off his glasses. I have a funny story to tell you, said Gillian.
I wish you would tell it to someone in the billiard room, said old Bryson. You know how I hate your stories.
This is a better one than usual, said Gillian, rolling a cigarette, and I'm glad to tell it to you. It's too sad and funny to go with the rattling of billiard balls. I've just come from a meeting with my late uncle's lawyers. He leaves me an even $1,000. Now, what can a man possibly do with $1,000? Old Bryson showed very little interest.
I thought the late Septimus Gillian was worth something like $500,000.
He was, agreed Gillian happily, and that's where the joke comes in. He has left a lot of his money to an organism. That is, part of it goes to the man who invents a new bacillus, and the rest to establish a hospital for doing away with it again. There are one or two small, unimportant gifts on the side. The butler and the housekeeper get a seal ring and $10 each. His nephew gets $1,000.
Were there any others mentioned in your uncle's will? Asked old Bryson.
None, said Gillian. Well, there is a Miss Hayden. My uncle was responsible for her. She lived in his house. She's a quiet thing, musical, the daughter of somebody who was unlucky enough to be his friend. I forgot to say that she was in on the ring and $10 joke, too. I wish I had been. Then I could have had two bottles of wine, given the ring to the waiter, and had the whole business off my hands. Now tell me what a man can do with $1,000. Old Bryson rubbed his glasses and smiled. And when old Bryson smiled, Gillian knew that he intended to be more offensive than ever.
"There are many good things a man could do with $1,000, said Bryson. "You," he said with a gentle laugh, "why, Bobby Gillian, there's only one reasonable thing you could do. You can go and buy Miss Lotta Laurier a diamond necklace with the money. And then take yourself off to Idaho and inflict your presence upon a ranch. I advise a sheep ranch, as I have a particular dislike for sheep."
"Thanks," said Gillian, as he rose from his chair. "I knew I could depend on you, old Bryson. You've hit on the very idea. I wanted to spend the money on one thing, because I have to turn in a report for it, and I hate itemizing." Gillian phoned for a cab and said to the driver, "The stage entrance of the Columbine Theater." The theater was crowded. Miss Lotta Laurier was preparing for her performance when her assistant spoke the name of Mr. Gillian. "Let it in," said Miss Laurier. "Now, what is it, Bobby? I'm going on stage in 2 minutes." "It won't take 2 minutes for me. What do you say to a little thing in the jewelry line? I can spend $1,000. "Say, Bobby," said Miss Laurier, "did you see that necklace Della Stacy had on the other night? It cost $2,200 at Tiffany's." Miss Laurier was called to the stage for her performance. Gillian slowly walked out to where his cab was waiting. "What would you do with $1,000 if you had it?" he asked the driver.
"Open a drinking place," said the driver quickly. "I know a place I could take money in with both hands. I've got it worked out, if you were thinking of putting up the money."
"Oh, no," said Gillian. "I was just wondering." 8 blocks down Broadway, Gillian got out of the cab. A blind man sat on the sidewalk selling pencils. Gillian went out and stood in front of him. "Excuse me, but would you mind telling me what you would do if you had $1,000? Asked Gillian. The blind man took a small book from his coat pocket and held it out. Gillian opened it and saw that it was a bank deposit book. It showed that the blind man had a balance of $1,785 in his bank account. Gillian returned the bank book and got back into the cab. "I forgot something," he said. "You may drive to the law offices of Tolman and Sharp." Lawyer Tolman looked at Gillian in a hostile and questioning way. "I beg your pardon," said Gillian cheerfully, "but was Miss Hayden left anything by my uncle's will in addition to the ring and the $10?
"Nothing," said Mr. Tolman.
"I thank you very much, sir," said Gillian, and went to his cab. He gave the driver the address of his late uncle's home. Miss Hayden was writing letters in the library. The small, thin woman wore black clothes, but you would have noticed her eyes. Gillian entered the room as if the world were unimportant. "I have just come from old Tolman's," he explained. "They have been going over the papers down there. They found a..." Gillian searched his memory for a legal term. "They found an amendment or a postscript or something to the will. It seemed that my uncle had second thoughts and willed you $1,000. Tolman asked me to bring you the money. Here it is. Gillian laid the money beside her hand on the desk. Miss Hayden turned white. Oh, she said, and again, oh. Gillian half turned and looked out the window. In a low voice, he said, I suppose, of course, that you know I love you. I am sorry, said Miss Hayden, as she picked up her money. There is no use? Asked Gillian, almost lightheartedly. I am sorry, she said again. May I write a note? Asked Gillian with a smile. Miss Hayden supplied him with paper and pen, and then went back to her writing table. Gillian wrote a report of how he spent the $1,000. Paid by Robert Gillian, $1,000 on account of the eternal happiness owed by heaven to the best and dearest woman on earth. Gillian put the note into an envelope. He bowed to Miss Hayden and left. His cab stopped again at the offices of Tolman and Sharp. I have spent the $1,000, he said cheerfully to Tolman, and I have come to present a report of it as I agreed. He threw a white envelope on the lawyer's table. Without touching the envelope, Mr. Tolman went to a door and called his partner, Sharp. Together, they searched for something in a large safe. They brought out a big envelope sealed with wax. As they opened the envelope, they shook their heads together over its contents. Then Tolman became the spokesman.
Mr. Gillian, he said, there was an addition to your uncle's will. It was given to us privately, with instructions that it not be opened until you had provided us with a full report of your handling of the $1,000 received in the will. As you have satisfied the conditions, my partner and I have read the addition. I will explain to you the spirit of its contents. In the event that your use of the $1,000 shows that you possess any of the qualifications that deserve reward, you stand to gain much more. If your disposal of the money in question has been sensible, wise, or unselfish, it is in our power to give you bonds to the value of $50,000. But if you have used this money in a wasteful, foolish way, as you have in the past, the $50,000 is to be paid to Miriam Hayden, ward of the late Mr. Gillian, without delay. Now, Mr. Gillian, Mr. Sharp and I will examine your report of the $1,000. Mr. Tolman reached for the envelope. Gillian was a little quicker in taking it up. He calmly tore the report and its cover into pieces and dropped them into his pocket. It's all right, he said smilingly. There isn't a bit of need to bother you with this. I don't suppose you would understand these itemized bets anyway. I lost the $1,000 on the races. Good day to you, gentlemen. Tolman and Sharp shook their heads mournfully at each other when Gillian left. They heard him whistling happily in the hallway as he waited for the elevator.
That's our program for today.
Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.